want to welcome in Greg Olson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Coach, thanks so much. So excited to be here. You know, excited to play with you, Russ. Russ, I love you. I mean, I love you. Let's make a baby. Remember, no max protection. Don't stick me back there for max protection. I do not do special teams. Does this look like the body of a 36-year-old? I've been doing a lot of yoga and nothing else.
So that is the surprise Zoom guest of all Zoom guests. You cannot beat having Will Ferrell show up, and the Seahawks did that, playing the role of Greg Olson. That was a good way to get their virtual meetings going, and we welcome you to the month of May and Friday here on Lunch Talk Live. Mike Tirico, this is the day we're supposed to be at the Kentucky Oaks with the Kentucky Derby tomorrow. Obviously, that's not the case. We have a great 3 hours of Derby programming for you. We're going to talk with Randy Moss and Jerry Bailey about that. Tim Layden, Ahmed Farid, all of our crew that is usually at Churchill Downs this time of year, they will join us. In addition, Sean McVay, the coach of the Los Angeles Rams, in a little bit. But first, let's get you caught up on some of the headlines and some of the things making news as things continue to go in one direction, like we're getting back to sports, and one direction we're going away from sports, all because of COVID-19. The good news is that one of the guys who would have been with us at the Derby and someone who we see on a regular basis in the NFL, Von Miller, has announced that he has tested negative after testing positive a few weeks ago. We wish him all of our best. Disappointed to see that the Little League World Series not be in Williamsport, a tradition that's gone on for some 7 decades. It's a great experience, and we'll miss seeing that. But we are happy to see NASCAR is coming back and planning to be on the track in a couple of weekends, May 17th, and it's a good time to bring in Jeff Burton, our NASCAR analyst, along with Steve Letart and Dale Jr. and all the guys who call the races for us here on NBC and NBCSN. So, Jeff, that date is now on the books with a real busy couple of weeks between Darlington and Charlotte. What's been the buzz amongst your friends in the racing community about this return?
Yeah, Mike, first of all, thanks for having me on. I love your show. It's a lot of fun to watch every day. You know, our sport is just like every sport. We want to get back to doing what we do. And everybody has missed being at the racetrack, and everybody's excited to, even though it's going to, you know, the format's going to be a little different, and some people that normally go to the racetrack probably won't be going. Everybody in the industry is really excited to get back. And I think it's important, you know, for our country, right, to get some normalcy back, to get something that we're all accustomed to watching and doing. I think it's really important under the right safety guidelines to get some things going. So I think our sport's excited to be one of the sports back, first back, because we're able to generate some enthusiasm and excitement with the fans.
Mm-hmm. Darlington and Charlotte, I'm going to get back to that schedule in a minute, but I want to ask you about the health, safety, and the social distancing part of this. For someone who's lived your life around this sport, why is NASCAR uniquely configured to be able to truly pull this off as early as they're going to?
Yeah, so if you think about it, if you know, with other sports, our players, the drivers, they don't have really much contact with other drivers. And then it's easy to set a protocol that says, hey, drivers, don't interact with each other, right? And then when you're in the car, you're in there by yourself. You have a helmet on, you have gloves on. Same with the pit crew. The pit crew for the teams, they have helmets on, they have gloves on. They really have their own personal protection gear already. And then, you know, beyond all of those things, in our sport, we're able to create a system where, you know, NASCAR has asked, you know, if you go to the racetrack, we don't want you to go to the shop. So you're really able to separate the teams. Mm-hmm. So let's just use Joe Gibbs Racing, for example. Their shop guys are able to stay in the shop, and their track guys can go to the track, and they don't have to intermingle. The driver doesn't have to go to the shop. The driver can prepare and do all the things he needs to do away from the shop. They'd love to go, but they don't have to. So there are a lot of advantages our sport has where you can create that distancing that we've talked about, where you can create a situation where you're wearing masks and wearing gloves. Unfortunately, we can't have fans, right? But the advantage of that is you can now use the entire infield of all of these racetracks, and they're big racetracks, to spread all the teams out. So where you would normally see fans inside of an infield, you'll see a hauler. And so you can separate teams that way. So the size of the facilities, the way the teams are structured, the separation between the drivers, the separation between the pit crews, all of those things give us an opportunity to get back racing.
Jeff, we're way past the era of drivers smoking and guys driving in wingtips. The folks who say, well, all you guys do is sit behind a wheel and turn left, and the people who don't know anything about the sport. There's a physical toll on the drivers. And when we go back and put that schedule up, we see four cup races in about an 11-day stretch from the 17th to the 27th. How difficult will that be on drivers who haven't been behind the wheel in about 8 to 9 weeks?
So the one thing that the drivers have been able to do, just like all athletes, it hasn't been able to stay training. You know, the training changed, right? You couldn't go to the gym you were going to. You had to change it, but the opportunity was there. And so if you're not in shape, it's your own fault. You know, so that opportunity didn't go away. Now, I do believe that there is race shape. There's race conditioning. And that's different between being in a gym and being in a race car. It's hard to replicate sitting in a 130-degree race car for 3.5-4 hours. That's hard to replicate in a gym. So if you get a hot weekend, if one of these first weekends is particularly hot, that could take a toll on drivers. Mm-hmm. That in and of itself could be difficult, and then you've shortened that recovery time. Now, the races are a little bit shorter than they normally are, so that helps the drivers, but I have little sympathy for that, because for the last several months, the opportunity to eat right, to train right, to prepare right, none of those things went away. You may have had to change what you were doing, but none of them went away. So if it catches up to somebody because they didn't prepare over the last 2 months, then that will show up, and that will not be that won't be good for that driver.
Jeff, all drivers go through stretches off season, whether it's even with testing in there, where you're just not behind the wheel with 30 other cars around you. How quick does it come back? How quick will the drivers be able to pick it up, especially at a place like Darlington in a couple of weekends?
Well, you know, Darlington would not be the place that I'd want to go to. And I love Darlington. I won a lot of races there and absolutely love that facility. But that's probably, it is one of the top three hardest racetracks that this circuit goes to. So you're going to have your mind in the right place. You're going to have to get in that race car, understanding it's a long race. Not get yourself in trouble early. You will adapt really quickly. After a few laps, you'll get into mode where you're connected to your race car. You're understanding what your race car can and can't do. Understand the strengths and the weaknesses. Those first few laps are the ones that you're really going to have to really be paying attention not to make a mistake. And this racetrack is, for those of you who don't know, Darlington is one of the oldest racetracks in NASCAR. It wasn't designed for cars going almost 200 miles per hour. It's very, very narrow. You have to run right against the wall, put yourself right on the edge of danger every single lap to make good lap time. So it is a very, very difficult racetrack with no practice. But, you know, these are professionals. These guys are, they prepare. They do the things they're supposed to. Experience will be a huge advantage, I think. I think people that have a lot of experience, drivers that have a lot of experience, teams that have been to Darlington, raced there a lot, I think those drivers and teams will have a major advantage going to a racetrack that is so difficult.
And in a sentence or two, we only have a few seconds to wrap up, no fans, any impact at all on the drivers?
I think, obviously, the fans are a huge part of what we do, right? I mean, there's an energy that you get from the fans walking through the infield, running into fans. There's an energy about that. That will be greatly missed. I do think, Mike, it's, you know, all sports are a little bit about mindset. You're going to have to, as a driver, go to the racetrack knowing it's going to look, feel, and sound differently, and you need to prepare for that. Because it is going to feel a lot different. And I'm a big believer in mindset. And if you walk into a racetrack and you aren't prepared and you're like, oh, my gosh, this is all different, that could get you started off in the wrong direction.
That's why we love you and Rick Allen and Dale and Steve talking to us fans through everything that goes on in the car, around the car, and around the track. We look forward to hearing that soon and look forward to seeing NASCAR back on. Jeff, we appreciate you hopping in with us. We'll talk to you here as we get closer to restarting.
Thank you for having me, man. Keep up the good job. It's a fun show to watch. Keep it up.
We appreciate that, pal. Thank you. It's because of people like you. And there's been a lot of talk of iRacing when we've had racing guests join us. Well, the IndyCar iRacing will continue the iRacing Challenge from Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's going to be live tomorrow right here on NBCSN. 2:30 Eastern Time. It's the month of May, right? And that always means Indy. So iRacing will help fill the bill a little bit for you. 2:30 Eastern, live tomorrow right here, NBCSN. When we come back live next, head coach of the Los Angeles Rams going into a new building, trying to find that old feel from a couple of years ago. Sean McVay joins us as we continue on Lunch Talk Live. What comes back to mind for you when you see 1988, the numbers that you helped put on that wall in that tunnel that every Notre Dame player sees every single Saturday they go out to play in South Bend?
I get goosebumps and I was looking and it's like, that's us. But I never say nothing out loud to anyone else. Because sometimes I don't talk about it sometimes, about what stuff we accomplished there. People ask questions and I'd be happy to answer them. But by saying your name or your team up there as being the last one and you touch for that time, you say, hey, those guys are touching something that we built.
I had a great visit with Tony Rice to help relive Notre Dame winning the national championship. West Virginia Notre Dame from 89, Penn State Miami from 87, a couple of Fiesta Bowls, and John Schaefer, the Penn State quarterback, joins me to relive that. And then the 84 epic Orange Bowl, Miami, Nebraska. You want to do something Friday night and spend some time if you love college football? That is NBCSN tonight. We're going to the ball for three great national championship college football games from the 80s. Sean McVay barely around at that point, 34 years old now, head coach of Los Angeles Rams. He joins us. Sean, have you enjoyed, if you've had any time, I know the draft has kept you busy, have you been able to see any of these old school football games as we've been all re-airing some games from days gone by?
No, it's been great. I've loved being able to do that. If there's anything that's been positive, it's being able to appreciate the history. And I think we're all fans of watching, you know, The Last Dance and all those things that are going on right now. But we're maximizing the time. And fortunately, you can see in the background, I'm in a great weather area.
Yes, you are. You're able to get outside a little bit. I will tell folks, I went back and watched both of those games. You can go back and watch that Fiesta Bowl with Penn State taking on Miami. There's so many great players who we've seen over the years to watch them back in college. It's a blast. It's a lot of fun. So tell me about this virtual world, because I know it wasn't the smoothest start for you guys on Monday as you're trying to do the offseason in a new virtual way. What happened on Monday and how have things gotten ironed out since?
Yeah, so I was feeling myself a little too much, Mike. I got with our IT guys. I said, I'll set up this Zoom call where I'll send it out to about 95 people and there'll be no issues. And they're like, are you sure, coach? I'm like, yeah, I got this. And I somehow sent out, when I was clicking the link to set up the specifics of the call, that you could only turn it on audio, but I sent it through email. So I'm up there just talking and going, and guys are like, man, coach is serious. Jalen Ramsey said, coach is really trying to get us to lock in. He's making us pull up a computer, and then we got to dial in on a telephone to listen what's going on. So it was a total catastrophe.
But it's gotten better since, I hear.
Yeah, we called a quick audible. We all jumped on another call, and guys have handled it really well. It's been smooth. I think it actually provided some pretty good levity to start out. People got a kick out of it. It's always fun to be able to get a good jab in on me after my mistake. But, you know, it's been a combination of taping things, doing live meetings. We had Doc Rivers come and speak to the team yesterday. What a great job he did. You talk about a guy that exemplifies all the things you hope to epitomize as a leader. I'm a huge fan of his. And if there's anybody that could keep guys locked in for about an hour on a Zoom call, it was him. I mean, you scroll through and you see how engaged guys were. You listen to the questions. It was really beneficial.
Yeah. That's a great idea. Sean, can you just explain as simply as possible for fans, what is it that you usually try to accomplish in May and early June in these OTAs with your players that becomes essential if you're going to hit the football field in September?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, really, we talk about mastering our systems, being the best team above the neck, and then it translates onto the grass. Well, we're not going to be able to do that right now. So the sole focus and concentration is on the above the neck emphasis, making sure guys have a real ownership and an understanding for the intricacies of their assignments. And so how can we keep these meetings as engaging, as educational, and as entertaining as possible for our guys in short spurts? So it's just the mental element of it. And then when we're able to come back, we'll really focus on the fundamentals, getting on the grass. And that's where really you can see if you're able to take the next steps.
Always want to hear about your draft class. You didn't have a first rounder here this year, but you bring in Cam Akers, who without a lot of support on the offensive line, did a really good job running the ball at Florida State. How important for your team to get a player who can make some of those big plays out of that backfield spot?
Yeah, it's a big deal. I think when you look at who we've got in our room already with Daryl Henderson, with Malcolm Brown, and with John Kelly, you wanted to add a guy like Cam to the mix. And I think what says as much about Cam as anything, Mike, is the amount of texts that I got as soon as we made that pick. You know, Derek Brooks is one of the first texts. I mean, this is a guy that's so revered. Even talking to our equipment manager, Brendan Berger, people at Florida State had reached out. You can't find somebody that doesn't love this guy, what he's about. And certainly the ability is there. He was an unbelievable quarterback in high school. He had some good trick plays, so we'll have to add to the inventory and see if he could throw it a little bit still.
we had Florida State against Notre Dame, and all their coaches raved about him. So you see a guy like this, you understand. Look, you've got to when you had Todd Gurley going, right, you guys had everything going. You had everything available to you. You've got to find that part of the of your offense once again to start competing again at the top of this division, because the division, Sean, you look back, this division has gotten significantly better in a real quick period of time.
There's no question about it. There's three great teams. They've all gotten better this offseason. And, you know, the challenge for us is how do we continue to adapt and evolve? And, you know, when you look at the running back position, we got some guys we have confidence in. You know, how that thing shapes out, I think, is going to be wide open. We'll let them shape their role and see what's the best way for us to, you know, maximize those guys. We got Thomas Brown as a new running back coach who I think will do an excellent job leading that room. And I'm excited for whenever that time comes that we can get out and get physically present with these guys.
Playoffs first couple of seasons, 9-7, just missing out on the playoffs last year. Where are we in terms of the Rams and what you're building? Because you get to the Super Bowl and you feel like you want to keep fighting, make that Jalen Ramsey, that one addition, to stay up here, right? But at the same time, you want to build something that's going to last for 10 years. So how are you trying to bridge those two philosophies?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike. And it's something that when you look at just some of the tough decisions that we've had to make this past offseason, you lose great players that have been instrumental in a lot of the success that we've had each of the previous three seasons. And so it is that I want to stay in that window of continue to compete each year, but having a long-term vision. And it's such a big puzzle that you're trying to put together. But we do feel like we've got the foundational elements to continue to compete. When you look back at last year, we make no excuses. We didn't play consistently well enough. But I don't think we're far off from being able to fix those things. And I know it starts with me. And I'm excited about our players attacking this season whenever we get a chance to really get together. But they did a great job this past week just having an excitement about just getting back together, even if we're looking at each other on computer screens.
Yeah, we're all trying to figure out the way of the world in this world now. Can you tell folks what that hunger is like when you've been to a Super Bowl and you've gotten close at an early part of your career to the pinnacle in your business, and now you got to reset here a little bit and get your group back that feeling again? What is that like as a coach who's in the early part of what hopefully is going to be a really long career to feel that hunger and that little pit in your stomach after you come off something like that?
Yeah, it's one of those things that especially during these times, you've had a lot of chances to reflect on really each of the previous three seasons as I'm kind of just continuing to accumulate experience in this role, Mike. And what I would say is this past year, when you don't have the success that we had had, it gives you an appreciation. I don't even think I truly understood the entirety and the magnitude of, hey, you get to the Super Bowl, you come up short, you're sick as a competitor, but understanding how hard it is to even give yourself an opportunity to get into the playoffs, to then win, advance, and get a play in a Super Bowl. So the appreciation from some of the adversity has given me, you know, even a greater perspective than I would have had otherwise. But I can assure you that, the hunger is there. I'm excited about it, but I think it's also about the enjoyment of the journey as well.
Your quarterback, Jared Goff, where should he be in your mind coming into next season?
I think he should be able to continue to take steps. You know, going into year four of the system, I think he feels really good. We talk about that quarterback being an extension of the coaching staff, Mike. I think he'll do that. The positive thing and what I feel best about last season is that, hey, we didn't play as well as we'd like to offensively, but if you look at the last five games of the season, I think that's when he played his best football, and it's about picking up where he left off there. And if he does that, I think a lot of good things are in store for Jared Goff and the Rams.
I'm curious, as you've gone through the draft process, Sean, and you're looking at the talent and you're trying to make your selections, are you noticing the trends in college football that the players, especially on that offensive side, may be now ready to adapt quicker to come into the NFL and make an impact than, say, 5, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, when you started your coaching career as an assistant around a lot of quarterbacks?
Yeah, you know what I think is good is I think that there's a appreciation for what's going on in the college game. And then, hey, how do we ultimately fit our systems to their skill sets? I think what ends up being the biggest thing that I noticed, Mike, in particular, is sometimes there's an easier evaluation on guys because you're able to see what they're doing. You know, for example, when you watch Burrow's film last year at LSU, you can see they're running a lot of plays that, you know, you've seen the New Orleans Saints run with Joe Brady's pass there. So that's an easy evaluation of, oh, I've seen these things work in our league. That's how they're playing, where sometimes it's a little bit more of a projection with other guys. But the last couple of years, when you look at Jared, you look at Mahomes, you know, this narrative of guys can't come out of the spread offense and then go play in the NFL, I think that's been shown that that's just not the case anymore.
It absolutely has. We've answered that question for sure. Well, I love talking to you here the first part of May. Unfortunately, last year we were doing it in person at the Kentucky Derby. I know you had a blast there, and hopefully we'll be able to do that a couple more Mays down the line. Thanks for hopping on with us, Sean, and best to your family and all the folks out there in Southern California.
Yeah, not quite the Kentucky Derby, but I appreciate it. Always good to see you too, Mike.
No. You too, buddy. Stay well. Sean McVay, coach of the Los Angeles Rams. When we come back, some fun stuff. Derby talk. Jerry Bailey and Randy Moss. The Bert and Ernie of horse racing, some refer to them as. My partners will join us to talk Derby when we come back.
I will give everybody a long shot to keep an eye on. And I think actually our very own Jerry Bailey, the Hall of Famer, rode in this era back in 1946, I believe. How about assault?
So bad.
20-1 can come from off of the pace.
That's enough. You cannot pick on Bailey when he's not here. Jerry's on the show tomorrow, so he's going to get the last word on you. So
I know he will. He always does.
See, it's one thing you learn quick. Watch out for your friends, especially the ones who are close to you. Jerry Bailey and Randy Moss join me here. So, Jerry, I'll let you have back at Edzo if you want.
I'm just shocked that his wife agreed to help him turn on a computer because I know he's not smart enough to do that, or the iPad, or whatever it is.
Winner. It's a winner. I love it. Hey, Jerry, before we go any further, happy anniversary. It is 27 years ago today, on the first day of May, the first Saturday of May, 1993, that Sea Hero, ridden by Jerry Bailey, won the Kentucky Derby, one of your two Kentucky Derbies. So happy anniversary, Jerry.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I'm glad my wife's not in the room. She asked me what I thought. I said, don't even bother coming. I've got no chance. So that was kind of bittersweet for me.
At least she doesn't remind you of it, right?
No, luckily I won one a few years later that she was president, so it kind of took a little bit of the sting out of it. But it was a magical moment for any jockey to cross the wire first.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Randy, we always talk about this, usually in a production meeting right around this time. We talk about how many years in a row you've been to the Derby and how many Derbies have been a part of your life. You've got to feel as much as anyone that absence of the joys of the Kentucky Derby right around this time right now.
Oh, definitely. I've missed one Kentucky Derby since my first Derby back in 1980 when I was in the newspaper business. I missed the 95 Derby. So this would have been, I don't know what we're going to call it if we're not at Churchill Downs, but this would have been my 40th Kentucky Derby. And ironically, through a very bizarre set of circumstances, Mike, in my first Kentucky Derby in 1980, I watched the race sitting shoulder to shoulder with Red Smith, the famous turf rider, who had no idea who I was, just some young kid with a moppy haircut back then. But yeah, that was my first Kentucky Derby in 1980. So cool. Genuine risk.
Well, my treat is that I get to sit next to these guys to watch the Derby. And I don't know if we have a picture that I sent to our production group this morning, but there's a picture as we're watching the Derby and the horses leave the gate and Larry Coleman says they're off in the Kentucky Derby. We have a spot there right off that sweeping first turn where you see thousands of people, the twin spires and the 20 horses. And I love taking that picture the last 3 years that I've been in that seat. And I will miss that so much because that stampede, that roar, the crowd, everything. Randy, you first, then Jerry. That's one of the most one of the coolest moments of the sports year, and we have as good a vantage point for it as anyone at Churchill Downs.
It's the stampede of horses running around the first turn with the iconic twin spires in the background. It's the walkover that we get a chance to be almost in the middle of from our first turn set, as the horses right. make that famous walk from the barn area with all their connections to the paddock. There's nothing like it in sports.
Yeah, for me, it's a bit of calm, actually, watching them, because when I was riding, that particular point in the race is one of the most dangerous because everybody's, quote-unquote, jockeying for position, and it's really rough, and you kind of hold your breath till you get around that turn, but it's a totally different feel doing it as a broadcaster because it's surreal watching them go quiet, and then the rush by you, and then quiet again.
It is something special. Guys, let's talk about the sport right now because there has been horse racing at some tracks around the country. There's actually a pretty big race this Saturday, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But Churchill Downs, Jerry, has announced that they are set to reopen here in about a week and a half. So what are you hearing and sensing as you listen to the conversation about restarting horse racing in different parts of the country?
Well, as you say, I'm down here in South Florida, and they have been racing. They have never stopped down here in Hallandale. Churchill Downs is going to operate in phases. They're going to bring the horses in, I think, from the Louisiana region and then the Arkansas region and then other regions throughout. And then they'll populate, and then they'll run spectatorless. I think everybody, if they can run, is willing to run spectatorless for quite a while. Hopefully that we can get through this initial phase of opening these different racetracks without a recurrence of the COVID infections. But I think every racetrack in America is anticipating opening. And while it's not optimum that there's no fans allowed, I think they're happy just to be running when they do.
Well, Mike, horse racing is in a very unique position among American sports in that mm-hmm. it's probably the best equipped of any sport to continue during this pandemic for a variety of reasons. But a lot of the tracks that we've seen that are running right now and that have been running in the last month and a half are tracks that were already racing when the real heart of this pandemic broke out across the country. In the case of Churchill Downs, the reason they had to delay their opening is just a concern, an understandable concern of the state of Kentucky and the people of Louisville. And suddenly this massive influx of not horses, they're not the problem, but the people taking care of the horses. I mean, Jerry mentioned mm-hmm. that they're going to come into Churchill Downs staggered, like from the fairgrounds in New Orleans. New Orleans has been such a viral hotspot that for the Arkansas Derby coming up tomorrow, trainers of horses, right, that are themselves based in New Orleans are not even allowed to walk into the Oaklawn Park grandstand because they've been barred from being there because of the status of the virus in the New Orleans area. So that's the real concern that there's been, but Churchill Downs has found a way to work through that.
So the Derby, and I should have put this at the beginning, the Derby, for those who don't know, has been moved from the first Saturday in May to the first Saturday in September, tentatively. Fans or not, obviously those questions are way down the line. And we're still uncertain where the Preakness and the Belmont Stakes will end. There's a possibility the Derby will not be the first, could be the last jewel of the Triple Crown, or obviously could be the middle as well. We don't know any of that for certain just yet. But to that Arkansas Derby, and Randy, I'll let you go first and then Jer, there are going to be some quality horses because the plan of how do you lay out the schedule to the Kentucky Derby is obviously, like everything else, completely changed given that the Derby's 4 months later than it usually is.
Definitely. And Oaklawn made a very wise decision when all this started shaking out and when the Kentucky Derby was rescheduled to Labor Day weekend to move the Arkansas Derby. It was originally scheduled to be run on April the 11th, and Oaklawn had another race called the Oaklawn Invitational Stakes that was scheduled to be run on May the 2nd. And when all this happened, Oaklawn just flip-flopped the two and now has delayed the Arkansas Derby to be run tomorrow. And as a result, it's gotten just this massive influx of horses, and it's split into two divisions. They had 22 horses that were entered in the Arkansas Derby. And to the benefit of every racing fan, they've split it into two divisions. So now Bob Baffert's tandem of superstar horses, Charlatan and Nadal, both get to compete in the Arkansas Derby in different legs.
And both of them are undefeated. Charlatan 2-for-2, Nadal 3-for-3. Nadal won the prep race for the Arkansas Derby at Oaklawn Park earlier this season. But they're not even the leading point getters. Charlatan has no points at this point. The leading point earner right now for the Kentucky Derby is a horse named Tis the Law, who completed his preparation down here in Florida. As a matter of fact, Florida got all their prep races in because they never stopped running. And Tis the Law, winner of the Florida Derby, now is atop the point standings, and his trainer Barkley Tagg, who trained Funny Side in 2003 to win the Derby. He's waiting on him to see what the rest of the year, what the rest of the schedule leading up to the September Kentucky Derby, how it will unfold.
And Jerry mentions the points. It's always significant how horses qualify for the Kentucky Derby is a points list, and so that will certainly change with different races being moved around the calendar. And then there's the other part of the equation, which we talked about with Edzo yesterday. Randy, we may see different horses in September than we would in May, because those 4 months for three-year-old thoroughbreds can totally change what the horse is about.
Oh, completely, Mike. I mean, all you have to do is look back to a couple of the well-known horses of the 2000s. There was a horse called Tis Now in 2000, 20 years ago, who on this day, on this weekend, when the Kentucky Derby was run first Saturday in May, had never won a race. And by the time the year was over, he had won the Breeders' Cup Classic. So if a similar situation had existed in 2000, he might have been the favorite in a September Kentucky Derby. And then 4 years ago, there was a horse called Arrogate, or 5 years ago, that Bob Baffert trained in 2015. Same thing. He had never won a race first Saturday in May, and winds up winning the Breeders' Cup Classic. So horses mature considerably from spring of their three-year-old season to fall. It's kind of the difference, Mike, between, let's say, a college football player that's just a freshman and a rookie in the NFL. A considerable amount of development from A to B, and we see that with racehorses as well.
It's a huge difference. Can I get your Arkansas Derby picks? Jerry, you first.
Randy always makes fun of me. But look, Mike, I look at this as if I were still riding Who Would I Want to Ride, because that was the whole point, try and pick the best horse in the race. I would pick both of Baffert's horses. He comes in there with a huge, hugely strong hand. Charlatan in the first division and Nadal in the second division. Although I think Nadal has a tougher time. It's a little harder race in terms of this competition than Charlatan's, but I think they both are odds on. I think they both have a great chance to win.
See, this is the same thing that I have to deal with on our NBC telecast, Mike. Jerry always gets to go first when he makes his picks. See, so that makes it sound like I'm like tagging on to Jerry always, right? No, I mean, the two Baffert horses are standouts in here, you know. So it would be very difficult to pick against them. And I'm glad, by the way, you got the Bert and Ernie references in there, just so there's no confusion. Jerry is Bert.
Exactly.
Jerry is the conservative, buttoned-up guy. I don't know if he has a paperclip collection, but he's the guy that's always straight-laced. I'm Ernie. I'm the guy that doesn't know what time the production meetings are, doesn't know what time the show begins necessarily.
Yeah, that's true.
So, it's true. Very, very, very well-named.
All of the above is true. Well, the good news is we get to do this again tomorrow. First Saturday in May, we're going to look back at American Pharoah's 2015 win in the Kentucky Derby, leg one of the Triple Crown. And then there is another virtual race, the Triple Crown Challenge, the Kentucky Derby folks are putting together. KentuckyDerby.com. Folks can also wager on it. It's being matched by $1 million to the folks at Churchill Downs. About 15 seconds. Randy, then Jerry, give me a pick here of the 13 Triple Crown winners in this virtual race.
Whoa, you mean I get to go first? Okay. Secretariat.
Yeah, you complained. I'm helping you.
If it's not Man of War, who's not on this list because he didn't win the Triple Crown, Secretariat would be the best horse of all time. So he will win if this thing has any credibility at all.
Knowing that Randy would pick Secretariat, the favorite, the low-hanging fruit, I'm going to go with Citation. Triple Crown winner, the first one in 1948, the last one, rather, in 1948, before Secretariat won 25 years later. I'm going with Big Sigh over Big Red.
Awesome. Well, we will see you guys tomorrow, 3 Eastern NBC, for our show for Saturday in May. We relive Pharoah. We also do some current horse conversation, and then the Arkansas Derby is right on NBCSN tomorrow night, right after our show is done. We look forward to all that. Guys, we'll talk to you tomorrow. See you on NBC. Thanks again, boys.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah, I love the background that Randy had, by the way. He's got a quarter pole there in his office. It's pretty good. We've got a treat up here in our studio. We'll share that with you in a little bit when Tim Layden joins us to talk about the Derby and his perspective on sports in this interesting time.
The air crackles with anticipation as horses are saddled. Kentuckians weep for their song. Fans everywhere hold their breath as the starting gate is loaded.
They're all in line. We're ready for the start. They're off. It's the Kentucky Derby.
Just more than 2 minutes later, the champion wears roses.
American Pharoah has won the Kentucky Derby.
Sometimes that champion is the greatest of all time. History is made.
Secretary just broke the old Kentucky Derby record.
Sometimes he is a hopeless long shot who writes a fairy tale.
And that bird has won the Kentucky Derby.
And sometimes the outcome takes not 2 minutes, but 22. And here, the question is answered. 2 minutes, a day, a year, a lifetime. Forever. And this year, September 5th in Louisville, that is the meaning of the Kentucky Derby.
That is a snippet of an essay that you can see in its entirety on NBCSports.com, or when you join us tomorrow for our first Saturday in May show, written and voiced by the great Tim Layden, who joins us now, quarter century at Sports Illustrated, last couple of years in our NBC Sports team, has covered so many Olympics and Final Fours and Derbies and championships in so many sports. You know his words, and his voice has become really one that frames things so well. So, Tim, and I'll warn everybody, there's a couple of seconds extra delay between Tim and I, so just be patient. Tim, can you frame for us the meaning of the first Saturday in May without all those fans in your eye?
Yeah, it's a very, I mean, it's been an unusual time for everybody for a couple of months now, Mike, but I think for a lot of us that are used to being in Louisville this week, it really kind of was hammered home. You know, this is a week when we all would have spent every morning out on the backside talking to people and trying to frame the stories that might unfold on Saturday, and then going back to the press center and writing our stories all day and going out and having dinner together during the week, and it's just it's a really special week on the calendar, and I think the entire strangeness of this virus situation that we're in has been overwhelming, but it's, I think, little landmarks and signposts really hammer it home, and this week has definitely been one of those.
Yeah, you come to the mileposts that have been so filled with familiarity for us, and when that familiar is removed, you feel a little vacant, even more vacant. In the soul, as all of us have been. Tim, there is an essay, by the way, that Tim has, or a story, I should say, about last year's Kentucky Derby, won by Country House, but of course Maximum Security crossed under the finish line first. You were right there in the middle of the emotions as we were waiting to find out what was going to happen. A year later, can you make any sense of it all?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, it was, I think ultimately that the stewards made the right decision to disqualify Maximum Security. That's the easy part of this equation and remains the easy part of it. The more challenging part is everybody probably realizes that Maximum Security was the best horse on the racetrack that day. The Country House wasn't really bothered by the incident that occurred and probably was never going to catch Maximum Security. But the rules of racing and the rules that the stewards have to follow are complex and arcane, and they were followed that evening and the right outcome was reached. But it didn't leave anybody comfortable that night, and I think it has left people uncomfortable a year later. And Mike, that's all been complicated by the revelations about Maximum Security's trainer, Jason Service, and about Maximum Security himself, that there were illegal drugs that were used in his barn and maybe on Maximum Security. And all of that just complicates a situation that was plenty complicated beforehand.
Exactly. And Country House not to be seen on the track again. Just some odd things involving the 2019 Derby. Tim, one last point here on horse racing. And you covered so many college football and college basketball, big events and big people. The sport of horse racing, like college basketball and football, has its problems, has its warts, and they are very public and discussed quite often. This sport comes to a larger audience usually one day a year. Usually that day is tomorrow. Where do you see the future of horse racing going over the next 5-10 years as the sport deals with a lot of internal problems right now?
Mike, I guess everybody's hope that really cares about horse racing is that obviously the biggest problem that arose a year ago was with all the horses that died, not only at Santa Anita, but elsewhere. And I think a lot of good, smart people within the sport have made an attempt to grind their way forward and come up with solutions and somehow match up the genuine affection that people in the sport have for horses with the need to really drive those numbers down. And I think that's happening very slowly. Mm. And obviously the lack of an internal uniform structure in the sport has made that happen more slowly. The fact that the great pageantry and the wonderful stories of the Derby are going to disappear this year for at least 4 months, that's going to slow it down. But I don't think racing is going away. But I think that's, you know, it's a cliche, but it's a marathon, not a sprint. I think that marathon continues, and I genuinely have faith in the people that care about racing to keep pushing it forward. And it would be nice if there were a big leap forward at some time, but that's not in the offing as of right now.
As we wrap in this virtual time, is there a virtual $2 bet or Bitcoin worth $2 or whatever that you would put on any one of those Triple Crown winners in the virtual race tomorrow that we're going to show?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a wonderful idea. It comes up, you know, it came up a lot when Farrah was going for the Triple Crown, and then again with Justified to rank all the Triple Crown winners. And, you know, I think that it's easy to pick Secretariat because we all saw that Belmont. But if I get to pick the winner of that race based on what they were in the Derby, I'm going to pick Citation. The Secretariat that won the Derby was really just recovering from the illness that affected him in the Wood Memorial, and he wasn't the big red that we saw at Belmont. I think Citation would beat him. I think there might be a few horses that would beat him on the first Saturday in May, not the second Saturday in June. But for the virtual race, I'm putting my virtual money on Citation.
Maybe we all have virtual money to bet on horse racing, right? Tim, thank you for your perspective as always, and we look forward to seeing
you. That's the only kind of money I do bet,
Mike. In September. It's the way to do it. Thanks, Tim. Tim Layden, our NBC Sports colleague, joining us there. When we come back, we'll wrap up the week with our pal Ahmed Farid. We'll discuss some of what we saw, what we didn't see, and we'll assess the background that is missing the Barry Sanders jersey today. Ahmed's coming up after this. You had Doug Collins on, and that was a great chance to see your basketball acumen.
Look at that. Is that... Well, see, basketball for me is confusing because the hole is in the air.
When Commissioner Roger Goodell did the wardrobe change out of the jacket to the sweater, Jerry Jeudy, got him to get in there, do a little TikTok, a little dance. John, could you ever get Roger Goodell to do something like that?
Probably not. I thought he had a little rhythm to him.
How about 8-year-old Ralphie Holloway? Ralphie, give it to us. All right, Ralphie. 8-year-old, maybe Ralphie will be an Olympian someday in soccer.
With the exception of my children being born, and maybe even then it's debatable, it was the single greatest moment of my life. There's not a bigger rush.
Yeah, this is the 06 World Series, Tigers, Cardinals, and you're somewhere in this line. So I've had your picture up in my office for years, a huge fan. So thanks for doing that, man.
Oh, thank you. I'm a huge fan of yours as well, and it's a very incredible experience for me to get on a show of a guy who I've been watching for years and years and years.
You don't have a picture of me in your office. I know that. Adam Wainwright wrapping up a very fun week. Now, we're going to bring in Ahmed Fried in a second, but I just want to say Ahmed's been doing this background battle thing. Everybody's background's all different in the virtual world. There's no doubt that for today, clutter aside, I win. This is the Kentucky Derby trophy. And by the way, it is inscribed May 2nd, 2020. It was ready to be handed to someone at around 7 o'clock tomorrow. We have it as a little bit of background for our first Saturday May show on NBC. So as we bring in Ahmed now, I've got to get a positive grade here for multiple sports going on at the same time and the actual Kentucky Derby trophy, Ahmed. Somebody out there top that.
There's a lot of positives, Mike, but I do have to check the rule book to see if that's not technically your possession. And so I don't even know if that counts. And so I will have to look at the rule book to see if you can apply the trophy in that way, Mike.
I see. Have you seen the person on Twitter, Room Raider, Skype Room Raider or something like that, who's rifling through all the MSNBC and CNN and Fox News backgrounds and with some very humorous comments about people's backgrounds in these virtual from home interviews?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm not alone. I'm not original, as always. I always like to think I am. But yeah, we're always kind of like peering at the background. So when Matt Casey came to me with the idea of like, hey, why don't you just look at other people's backgrounds and make fun of them? And I was like, all right, I'm not really doing much of anything else, so I can do that. But it's a little discouraging, Mike, because you realize that as I'm talking to you, I think I'm saying some really interesting things, and I hope people are taking them to heart. But really, probably 50% of the time, they're just trying to see what's in my background and try to find out information by looking behind me and not actually listening to what I'm saying.
I didn't hear anything you said. I was just kind of looking over your shoulder there. It's a good point, but thanks for that. You cover all these sports along with us. So just in general, I don't know if you felt what I felt this week. It felt like we were going almost at medium speed for the first time to the return of sports. And then there were reality checks at a couple of different fronts, whether it was Dr. Fauci or states extending the stay-at-home ban through Memorial Day, through the month of May, that, no, we're not that close to getting sports as we know it back. What has it felt like for you this week?
Yeah, I think the same thing. And in a weird way, you know, this is so abnormal, but it's almost like the new abnormal now. This month has felt a little more usual. It's kind of felt, I'm not going to say right, but we're kind of getting into a routine, which is a little bit scary too, because I want these things to come back. And of course we do have live horse racing. And oftentimes we hear people say that, you know, sports is a distraction from a time when things are bad, which I think is partly true. But I also think it undersells what sports is, because I think sports is so much better when life is good, you know, and that's truly what we want. We don't want to be distracted by all these things that we love. We want to enjoy them when our life is also good and put energy into our favorite hobbies, which is following all these sports. And so that's, you know, it's like coming in stages. We are getting some live events back. Horse racing has been here, NASCAR coming back, but it will be oh so much better if in September we really, truly can celebrate at Churchill Downs with thousands of our friends when sports is really back with everyone.
And that's the perspective I'm starting to get now. You see things like a handshake between coaches at the end of a football game, or the handshake line at the end of a hockey playoff series. And like, are we going to see that again? You see these beautiful shots of Churchill Downs and the Kentucky Derby. Are fans ever going to be packed back that close? You would hope at some point, but what's it going to look like in those interim steps not when we're playing behind closed doors, but when there are a third of the fans, a quarter of the fans there. I'm just having these thoughts. You kind of, every time you think positive, you start layering all these reality negatives. And I just don't know where we kind of settle on that. And I think your point's really good. We'll take a better appreciation for sports when we have NASCAR to talk about, the Arkansas Derby, some real horse racing. Just the conversation of actual stuff instead of old stuff will change the calculus a little bit.
Yeah, I have so many friends that I have made throughout the years, and I've been in sports my whole professional life. I followed sports growing up, but I don't know what to talk to them about as much anymore. It's like, I know we're friends, and we often have long, long conversations on the phone, but it's like, without a game going on, I don't know what we communicate. So it really is. It's like part of our being. It's a fabric of what we talk about every day. And I hope we do, like you say, I hope we do when it comes back, we appreciate it a little bit more because it's so easy to get into the hamster wheel of game after game. It's like, okay, we had a game today. Let's move on to the game next week. We're here for this 3-month period or whatever it's going to be. We have had a chance to stop, look back at some of the old things, appreciate them, and don't just go from one thing to the next.
Yeah, we'll do that for about a week, and then we'll start complaining about our favorite team's coaching move or the quarterback didn't do this, and we'll be back to ourselves. This virtual derby that we have coming up tomorrow on NBC at 3 Eastern with all the Triple Crown winners, do you have a pick?
I do. So I knew this was coming, so I've been doing some research, and I've looked at the odds, and of course, wanted to go with Secretariat, but you can't do that. You can't go with a favorite. Right. So I've heard Tim Layden talk about it. He picked Citation. Jerry picked Citation. I mean, why don't I just copy them? I'm going with Citation to win the virtual Kentucky Derby. So here's what everyone has done. So you have not, Mike, made your pick, and so we got to hear who you're going with.
And we're off air in 9 seconds, so I can't do it. All right, I'm going to go with Citation. I'll join you with Citation. So thanks. Enjoy the background battle for next week. Ahmed Fareed there. Rich Eisen show is next. Have a great weekend. See you tomorrow for Derby Talk.